This episode of the Productivityist Podcast is brought to you by Transpose. Your solutions, your way. Transpose has become an essential part of my productivity workflow, and if you give it a go, I bet it'll become part of yours too. Head over to productivityist.com/transpose to give it a test spin, and stick around because I'll talk a bit more about it during the podcast. Now, let's get on with the show. Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. I am the founder of Productivityist, productivity strategist, and host of the show, Mike Vardy. And this week on the show, we have Graham Alcott, the founder of Think Productive and the original Productivity Ninja. We talk about the 9 characteristics that you need to become a productivity ninja, and I had a great time talking with Graham. We're actually going to talk a little bit more in the future, and I'll get to that after the interview here. But I just wanted to share with you this really cool conversation that we had, and he's got a British accent, which is really awesome. So it's great to talk to somebody from the UK. I don't get to talk to people across the pond very much when it comes to this kind of thing, and I've been looking forward to talk to Graham for a really long time, and now you get to hear our conversation. Here is me and Graham Alcott of Think Productive and the original Productivity Ninja here on the Productivityist Podcast. I'd like to welcome Graham Alcott to the Productivityist Podcast. Graham, thanks for joining me this week.
Hi, Mike. Good to be here.
So you are the Productivity Ninja. Well, you're not really the Productivity Ninja because there's lots of them out there now, right? You've got like a whole clan, correct?
Yeah. So we have Productivity Ninjas who are on their little mission around the world. So we have basically licenses in Canada, the US, Australia and Western Europe, and then I'm based in the UK with our team here. So yeah, we're spreading the productivity message around the world, and our main focus is B2B. So we go into companies and we work with the teams there, and you know, help them to implement a lot of this productivity stuff, but like actually at their desks and in the, you know, the real kind of cut and thrust of what they do.
Let's talk about the characteristics that you have to have for being a productivity ninja, because there are 9 of them that you've listed, and I'm alluding to a guest post that you did. I know you talk about this in your book as well, but over at I'll share the link. I've got it here, so I will. Cool. I can't remember the link right now. I put it in Evernote and I'm looking at it. So first off, the first is a Zen like calm. I find this to be interesting that you make this the first one.
Yeah,
you know, like I get it, maybe because of the whole Zen component of it, but most people, when they're trying to become more productive, don't have that. The last thing they can think about is being calm. They'd rather get the stuff taken care of and then focus on calm. Why have you listed this first in the 9 characteristics?
Because I think everything else needs to work towards Zen-like calm, first of all. But I think also, you have to, Zen-like calm is not like a once everything's done, I will be calm. Like
right.
For me, it's like making sure that you manage your attention to be in the moment and present on whatever it is that you're doing. So for me, like Zen-like calm is paying attention in meetings and not being on your phone. Zen-like calm is working on one thing at a time and being really present and in the moment on that one thing. You know, so I think there's so much more to it for me than just like trying to get everything done first and then, oh, then I'll be calm. You know, and it's always like, a week on Friday, everything will be fine. And guess what? You know, a week on Thursday, there will be something else that will come along and hit you. And, you know, you have to be prepared for that. So I think if you are going through your life with that sense of like, once I've cleared everything up, then I'm allowed to be Zen-like and calm and in the moment, then I think you're playing the wrong game in many ways. So that's kind of why it's first. And, you know, I would kind of ask this question to people, which is, you know, if you ask that question of like, what's the time or what are the instances that you would describe where you're most productive? If you're answering that question with when I'm on a deadline, what you're really saying is the times when I get into a state of flow and into a state of being Zen-like and calm. So it's like the deadline forces you to focus only on that one thing. And, you know, my argument is it's about trying to find ways that don't have the stress of the deadline that will force you into that Zen-like calm, right?
Right.
So it's, you know, that's partly about capturing and collecting and getting all that stuff off your mind and all that stuff that, you know, is very common productivity advice. But it's also partly about having a mindset of what else, you know, am I allowing to seep into my attention, whether that's phone notifications, whether that's thoughts that you're having, whether that's distractions of what's going on outside. And, you know, it's really for me about training your mind to really focus on the here and now and what's in front of you.
Now, the next one, number two, I think we all struggle with. I imagine you do too, still from time to time, is the ruthlessness, saying no to as many. So, I mean, only, you know, again, you can only, I think the only way you can figure out whether you're overwhelmed or not, and the calendar is definitely an indicator of this, like in terms of distractions and all that stuff. But I think you have to have, and this ties into number three is weapon savvy, is you have to have some kind of, like you call it a second brain, like the app or paper planner or something that shows you everything that you've committed to so that you can recognize, holy crap, I have too much here. So talk about ruthlessness and then let's go into weapon savvy. Like how do you help people become more ruthless with their you know, their attention?
So I think there's kind of two elements to saying no more often and being more ruthless. One is, as you just alluded to there, the idea of it's much easier to do that once you have a nice, objective, data-driven analysis of what's on your plate, right? Mm-hmm. So if you've got a good project list, if you've got a good list of actions and you've got a, you know, good calendar and all those kind of things, it's much, much easier, you know, when your boss comes up to you in the office and says, hey, there's this new thing I want you to do by Friday. Can you drop everything and do it? And by the way, at that moment, everyone thinks, I'd love to be the superhero here. So it becomes this sort of myth that everyone tries to play up to, which is, yeah, I can definitely do it. And, you know, you want to believe it and they want to believe it. So I think if you have that objective data-driven analysis in front of you of like, here are my other projects, here's what's going to suffer, it's much easier to say no to the new thing, you know, rather than if you're just reacting to email and you're reacting to lots of other stuff that's going on. And then someone gives you a new thing and it feels like, well, I don't actually know what's most important in my life. So I'm going to take this new thing as being, you know, loudest, latest, must be the one, you know, sort of thing. So I think that's the first aspect. I think the second aspect to saying no more is a much trickier thing, which is the sort of emotional aspect of letting people down. And this is like certainly something that I struggle with a lot is like, you know, I really want to do a good job for people, to please people, to be the person who can help. And, you know, and so I think sometimes, you know, recognizing that there is an emotional cost to saying no to stuff that's still good, but not the greatest thing you should be doing, right? So it's like, it's very easy to say no to stuff that you think is pointless, and much harder, I think, emotionally to say no to stuff that might let someone down, but also might actually be really worth me doing for you, or really, you know, really might be a good thing for you to have, but I don't have the time or the energy or the attention right now to be able to give you that, you know? So I think that's the harder bit. You know, I think it's very easy to get under control in terms of lists, but like even with that, I think there's still that kind of emotional challenge to overcome.
Now, when I look at weapons, I think of a ninja and I think of the turtles immediately. I don't know why, but I think about their weapons and they each only had one.
Yeah.
Other ninjas that I've seen on the big screen, not in real life, obviously, but on the big screen, have had maybe a few, a sword, you know, or katana, ninja stars, blow darts, those kind of things. When you talk about being weapon savvy, and this I think is a nice, you know, kind of way to look at it, is that the ninja has very few weapons, but uses them very effectively.
Yeah.
Is that, that's kind of what you're getting at, right?
Completely. And I think for me, this is something that I really struggle with when I read a lot of other productivity, you know, kind of blogs and books and all that stuff, is like where it gets so obsessed with the technology. And also, here's the thing, obsessed with moving from one to-do list app to the next, as if that's going to be the holy grail. And like that stuff really bugs me. So for example, I've been running my business Think Productive for just over 7 years now. And in that time, I've had three different ways that I set up my second brain. I was on Outlook Tasks, Microsoft Outlook Tasks, which was a very definite decision, because most of the people I deal with, and certainly then when I was running the training, they're all Microsoft Outlook people. So I decided to just be on the same tech as them and make that work really well. And actually, I think Microsoft Outlook Tasks, if you set it up in certain ways, is a great list manager, you know. And it's like one of those things that it's so untrendy to say that, and it's like, you know, people are really down on Microsoft. I then moved to Tootledo, and then I'm now on Nosby. And Nosby, I'd always kind of looked at as being like, yeah, like those guys are doing a really good job, and I, you know, really liked Michael, but I wasn't really that sort of keen on moving, because I'm never keen on moving. But the move was kind of forced on me, which was when I passed my iPad around at a workshop I was doing in Melbourne in Australia. And I said, OK, this is so you can see how I set up my Toodle-Doo and, you know, have a look at this and have a look at that. And whatever you do, don't press that button at the bottom. And of course, someone did and just wiped all of my data from there, which was
the biggest.
Yeah. So imagine that, right? Like, it was the biggest sort of stress of a day that I could have had. But then I decided when I rebuilt it, it's like, okay, that's now an opportunity to shift again. And I've moved to Nosby and really been really happy using Nosby ever since. But I've had 3 task managers in, 7, 8, 9 years, something like that. And, you know, whenever someone comes to me and they say, what's the app to download? I say, right, dude, ask a different question. You know, like, I just think it's, you know, we've really got to get into the psychology first and really think about, like, how we're using technology and being savvy around that rather than let's find a different weapon every 10 minutes, you know?
Well, and for me, when someone asks me that, I say, I don't know. And they look at me like, they're like, what do you mean you don't know? You're a guy who, like, and when I think back now, I've probably used 3 as well. I mean, I've used OmniFocus. I've used Asana. And I've used Todoist, and I've stuck with, I still use Asana and Todoist, Asana for Productivityist stuff and Todoist for my personal and non.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because I like the interface of Todoist, but it doesn't scale as well for large teams. And so I like the fact that Asana has that. I love what Michael's done with Nosby. I just haven't, again, the thing is, and you're exactly right. Like, there are so many great tools out there that you can keep tinkering and moving, but I'd rather build stuff than buy new tools and have nothing to build. Yeah. Right. You know, I mean, Trello is a great tool for, pick a tool and stick with it, you know, find one, because they're always going to be, I mean, The biggest problem, and we talked about this before we started recording, is people say the app will solve the problem. And it's not, I mean, you know, again, if a ninja has a sword, like all these weapons, but has no way of being going to number 4, stealthy or can, and, you know, has any way of kind of disconnecting or being able to do stuff without the weapon, then they're pretty much useless. Like, they're not going to be able to do anything. So, I mean, I think you have to have that approach in mind before the apps. Now, let's talk about stealth and camouflage. So you say, and I think this is a really important point that not a lot of people do. And I think now in your workshops, do you do this? Do you say, okay, we're going to get into the weeds and spend time at your desks. And then before we wrap up, we're just going to remove ourselves from the chaos and just talk more philosophical? Or, like, how do you do that to kind of encourage number 4 to happen with people?
Yeah, like, we'll often do that on the day, right? So we'll spend some time at people's desks. We'll spend time then. My sort of joke around this is, like, a lot of people who work in open plan offices, what they don't realize is if you could design the least productive environment in which to do work, it would look something like your open plan office, right? Mm-hmm. So I often joke that, you know, what's more productive than being at your desk is being in the cupboard at the end of the corridor, or, you know, sat on the stairs with your laptop, or sat in the coffee shop around the corner just with an iPad and a pen and paper or whatever you need to have in front of you. So I think for me, again, it comes back to that sort of sense of prioritizing thinking. And for me, when you look at how so many jobs right now, people are talking about how, these things are going to be automated. The things that robots can do and the robots and the things that robots can't do. What's interesting about that is it always comes down to, where do I add value? And it always comes down to, within that, thinking, right? So thinking is your work. And for so many people, they have this opposite psychology around that, which is, I don't have time to do the thinking. Thinking is a luxury. Thinking is something I'll do a week next Friday. And it's that sort of mindset. So a lot of what we do is about saying, no, thinking actually is the work. Of course, there's a little bit of thinking involved in emails and so on and so forth. But you need to have, you know, much more higher level conversations with yourself about what your projects are looking like and what your team need to do and all those kind of things. So, you know, for me, stealth and camouflage is a means to an end. It's about saying, let me reclaim that time and be very on some level, perhaps a little bit cunning about that. So I worked with someone in London who she would put in her diary thinking time or planning time, and her team or her boss would just book over that in her calendar and say, well, you can do your thinking and planning another time. This is important. And, you know, almost making the assumption that her thinking and planning was not important. So I encouraged her to write in her diary Project Magenta. And so what that meant was it was like an hour where she could be out of the office. And of course, no one else knew what Project Magenta was, and they were too embarrassed to ask.
Yeah.
So they just left her alone, and she got her thinking time around the corner, that like that. So it's one of those things where I think if you, you know, just because you want to prioritize thinking, you also need to make sure that you've got the environment around you to make that happen. And often it's the pressures of team and the, you know, the pressures of the rest of the organization that stop that from happening. So, you know, from my point of view, if you need to put a cheeky hour in your calendar and make it look like you're at some very important meeting, and actually the very important meeting is just you and a piece of paper and a pen, for me that's stealth and camouflage. And it's really about, like, you know, giving people the autonomy and the empowerment to reclaim thinking as a good thing to do, you know.
All right, we're halfway through the characteristics of what it takes to be a productivity ninja, and I want to share with you now a word from our sponsor who will help you deliver and change and manage and track your information much better. It's going to change the game for that. And this is Transpose. Transpose helps you get rid of the messy spreadsheets, notes, files, and databases. You're going to have so much more business solutions in just minutes. It's a great tool. If you want to do things like your weekly review and do reviews like we talked about, or checklists, things like that, Transpose is ideal for that. There are so many different ways. If you go to their website, again, productivityist.com/transpose, you'll see that one of their graphics, and it's really quite interesting, is that there's just a huge mess of things. You've got your product management tool, you've got your storage, spreadsheets, notebooks, CRMs, Kanban, online form, everything is all over the place. With Transpose, they're nicely and neatly unified. Plus, there are actually a ton of solutions that are built by the community that you can call upon. So you don't even have to invent the wheel every single time. They talk about the different views that you have. So you have different views that allow you to look at project management and workflows differently. There's Kanban view, which is very helpful for people who are maybe used to using Trello or something like that, or want to use Trello for their task management app and want to use Kanban view for, say, project management, which is one of the things we've done here at Productivityist. Calendar view. There's table view, and then there's analytics. You can actually look at analytics, which is really, really cool. And then there's a whole academy. If you want to learn how to use Transpose, just go to academy.transpose.com. You can learn how to use it. They've really put a lot of thought into this application, and I'm a big fan. There's relational databases, because that's what it is. With linked records, you can have relational databases, which is awesome. You have contacts. You can use CRM stuff. You can connect to Google. There's so much here. And the nice thing about Transpose is you can ease into it. You don't have to use all the features at once. You can start small and build from there. Now, there are different pricing options for this. There is the free basic model of Transpose, which gives you 10 solutions, up to 2 gigabytes of storage, 2 collaborations per solution, and export records to CSV. That's free. But if you go with Prime, either annually or monthly, you can have so much more. If you pay annually, you're going to get all the benefits of Prime monthly, which are unlimited public and private solutions, unlimited storage, unlimited collaborators, white labeled web forms and solutions, which is something I'm going to be really looking at more, white label PDFs and reports, third party business integrations, and then you can export records, not just to CSV, but Excel and PDF. If you pay monthly, it's $14.99. But if you pay annually, it's only going to be $12.49 a month, and you get 2 months free. You get an exclusive membership card. You get access to Transpose meetups so you can meet with other people using Transpose. And you get a 1-hour consultation and setup call. Really a no-brainer here. Transpose is a fantastic tool, and I encourage all of you to give it a try. Head over to productivityist.com/transpose and check out what Transpose has to offer. Transpose, what data management should be. I'd like to thank Transpose for sponsoring this episode of the Productivityist Podcast. And now, let's get back to the show. All right, now we're on to number 5, and we got about 15 minutes, not even, to get through the last 4, the last 5 of them. So we're going to go a little bit unorthodox.
I'll talk quickly.
With unorthodox, when it comes to number 5, which is unorthodox, I love this, because a lot of people say that this is the way that we have to, you know, we have to do things. We have to have a to-do list, and we just go checkbox by checkbox by checkbox. You and I both probably preach the same kind of thing, like why would you do it the same way that somebody else does if it doesn't work for you? And I think productivity needs to be personal. And which is odd, because that shouldn't be unorthodox, but it is. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, completely. Yeah. And I also think this happens at team and organizational level as well, where you know, if you're in the marketing department of a car company, you look at the other car companies and see what they're doing, right? And it's like, for me, it's also about trying to take inspiration from really unusual places as well. And I think there's like you were talking about before, this idea of seeing opportunities to talk about productivity and everything, whether you're watching films or whatever. And I think sometimes, you know, the most unusual books that I read are the ones that bring me back to a different way of doing my work in a better way. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
I think sometimes it's like trying to find those little hidden gems in unusual places is I think, A, it's like it pushes you on because it makes you think creatively about different things, but B, it's kind of fun, you know? So yeah. I did a whole bunch of experiments a couple of years ago where one of them was whenever I was procrastinating, I had to make the decision by the throw of a dice. So I had to say, okay, so I'm going to throw odds or evens, or I had to make up two different options or three different options or six different options. And just that idea of let me not think about the two assumptions I would usually come up with, but let me think about four others, or let me think about two other ways of doing this, I think it's really powerful, because so much of our thinking just gets entrenched in like, how did we do things last week? How does our colleague do this? And, you know, being able to sort of change that and twist it slightly, I've just found that a really powerful tool for me personally. I know that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And most of the books I've been reading lately don't just talk about the way things are done. They talk about, well, if it doesn't work this way for you, try this or try this or try this. So they give you like, and you may not try any of those ways, but ultimately it gets the mind going to say, well, they're giving me a bunch of options. So what if I take all of these and kind of Frankenstein it and make it my own? And I think that's really key. And also by making it personal, you can be more agile, which is number six, agility. Like you need to be able to be nimble and flexible, because the problem is there's so many tools out there that are so rigid that it's very difficult for you to get great work done when there's so much rigidity around it, right?
Yeah, completely. And, you know, for me, that's again comes back to why it's so important to have the second brain set up well and why it's so important to react. And I think, you know, if you read stuff like Stephen Covey's Seven Habits, right? So that book was written where information input came at, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning when you first clocked on in your office, and you have six pieces of paper in your pigeonhole, and that's those are your letters for the day.
Yeah.
And then you plan your day. And, you know, of course we live in this kind of constant age of, you know, constant information input these days. And so I think agility becomes, for me, like on one level, like it's the micro level of that is it's how we need to structure our day. And then on a sort of bigger level, I kind of think about this in a kind of career sense as well, in a bigger sense, which is that like you have to have times where you have that recovery built in, or the thinking built in, to allow you to then be reacting to stuff next Monday and the Monday after. And, you know, if you're constantly in that kind of sense of just reacting to stuff and just going faster on the hamster wheel, it actually gets more and it just gets harder and harder as time goes on to be agile. So you kind of have to have that recovery built in, you know, in order to give yourself that catch up time to then be able to react again the following week. Do you see what I mean?
Well, and you've seen like Covey's team built, and they've got the Five Questions book out now.
Yeah.
And David Allen, Getting Things Done. I mean, he had to revise it for the new, because it's different. Both those books were written when input levels were lower. Now, I mean, the arguments have been, well, the management of them still doesn't need to change, but it's that much more difficult to do because it's assaulting your senses so much more often now. I think that's the problem. And that leads to number seven, which is being mindful, mindfulness. Because with all of these things that are pulling and pushing at us, it's very difficult to stop. And that's the only way I think you can be mindful, right?
Completely. And so, yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think there are so many things that, you know, and like you're saying with Covey there, if he was writing that book now, there would be things in there that would be really different. And obviously David Allen's updated Getting Things Done with a sort of similar view. But I think, you know, just the volume that we're dealing with makes, and I think this is only going to get worse. It's going to make it harder and harder to spend an hour being mindful.
Social media is doing it more and more and more. Like you have to be constantly present. But the problem is if you're constantly present with other people, you can't be present with yourself.
Totally. And I've experimented with different things over the years, as I know you have. So I'm off Facebook right now and very, very happy to not be on Facebook. I've been off it for about 3 months, and I originally decided it, and it was actually more because I was just getting really annoyed by all the news and politics and everything I was reading. I was just, it was making me more and more annoyed.
A lot of soapboxing. A lot of
yeah,
soapboxing.
yeah, yeah. And the other thing that really gets me about Facebook and Twitter to some extent is like when somebody dies, everybody almost has to be like the prime minister or president of their own life and sort of walk out the steps of the White House and give their personal little speech about like that. And it's just like, oh, please, you know, you weren't a big fan of so-and-so. So, yeah, so I think so for me, I think a very transformative experience was actually when I wrote this book, when I wrote How to Be a Productivity Ninja, it was like on my list every week as a major project. And, you know, it was like write first chapter or write first bit of book or whatever. Wasn't happening. And I ended up booking some tickets and basically finding a beach hut in Sri Lanka, which basically had no Wi-Fi. I had this cheap little Chinese mobile phone where if I wanted to send a text message and write the letter C, I had to push the button three times. Remember those, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember
those.
So
it was like I had no smartphone. I had no internet connection. And for 3 weeks, you know, I basically did two things. I wrote How to Be a Productivity Ninja, the first draft, and I went and hung out with a Buddhist monk down the road who taught me mindfulness and meditation. And a lot of that came through, you know, in the first draft of the book because of that. And it felt very risky, you know, back in 2011, talking about mindfulness and reclaiming your attention as something that was related to productivity and something that particularly with, you know, my audience is generally big businesses, right? Like it kind of felt a bit wacko and a bit hippie and something that I couldn't necessarily share with businesses. And I look at it now in 2016 and it's like every business is signing up for mindfulness stuff. And it's like, I think, you know, partly people look at it as this kind of miracle cure, which is a problem in itself. But like, it feels to me like that's a very important conversation that we need to keep having as the velocity increases and also our pressure to be online and connected increases as well.
Well, I mean, I'm going to recommend to people, if you think that you can't take time to meditate or be more mindful, get Headspace.
Like the
Headspace is great. The take 10 meditation. I mean, I literally, the first time I did one, I finished I finished it and, who's the guy that does it?
Andy Felt.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
His voice is really great. British accent too, which helps. I think you're partial to that, I would imagine. But also, like,
you think that's exotic? I just think he's like from down the road.
Just a dude down the road. But for me, it was just like literally at the end, I felt refreshed. I almost broke down in tears, to be honest, because I just felt like all the tension had gone. And so, if you have time, and you do, you just got to make time. It just like Headspace literally takes, I think it's a 10-minute time span.
Yeah, so there's a thing on there which is free called Take 10, and then there's like a paid for bit. And we've actually been using Take 10 in the Think Productive office. So our kind of admin team down here in Brighton, we do that. We do a huddle at 10:30 and then we follow up with the 10-minute Take 10. And it's like, you know, it really, for me personally, it's like it's a great start to the day to kind of have that reminder to be present, not just for that 10 minutes, but then for the rest of the day as well. You know?
Yeah, it does carry over for sure. Now, speaking of carrying over, you want to make sure that you prepare. That's the number 8 option before we wrap up. We've got only a few minutes left. Being prepared. Now, when do you prepare for the next day? Do you prepare? Like, when do you prepare in general? So let's talk about preparation really quickly. We'll talk for most people, they want to just make sure, let's go to the day. Do you prepare the day before? Or do you prepare the morning of?
Oh, like I'm really terrible in the mornings.
You're a night owl like me, right?
Yeah. So I basically prepare once a week, which is on a Thursday afternoon, which is when I do my sort of big weekly review.
Yeah.
And also that's the time where I would do a lot of the kind of admin preparedness. So for example, I'm literally, after I finish talking to you, I'm about to go travel 3 hours through the evening here. And then I'm doing a client gig tomorrow up in Birmingham, which is, if you don't know, is where my football team Aston Villa is based. It's the soul of the universe. But yeah, so I will print all that stuff the Thursday before because I want to just batch it and do it all in one go. And then in the morning, I can't function without a checklist. So I basically have a little checklist that just takes me through a few steps and it's kind of how's my energy, what else is on there, what's in my calendar for the day and what dependencies do I have around tasks. And then I try and schedule one big rock for the morning and one big rock for the afternoon. So that's kind of my little sort of list of stuff that I go through in the morning. And like, I know, like if I haven't done that, if the day starts with, so for example, tomorrow, I won't start by doing that because I'm doing this client thing and it's starting quite early. I know the rest of the day I'll be a bit weird because yeah. I'm not, because I haven't done that.
Which is so why, you'll need to get headspace.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, that's as critical. The daily review part is as critical as the weekly review for me.
Totally. You know?
And it's, I think the weekly review is important in terms of taking that more strategic level, but like the daily thing, and also part of that daily conversation with myself, I always sound schizophrenic when I say this, but like, I think you have to have that conversation with yourself of like, what is my intention for the day and what does success look like today? Because I think otherwise there's always going to be another 100 things on your list. And so for me, like a big part of productivity is kind of being comfortable with the stuff that you don't get done and being comfortable with like what's still on the list at the end of it.
Absolutely. And I mean, the bottom line is again, if you, when you prepare daily, then when you go to the weekly, you won't have to course correct as much because you wouldn't have veered so far off course. We're going to wrap up now. Number 9, by the way, is Productivity Ninja is not a superhero, but it often appears that they are. And this is very true because if you do all those other 8 steps, then you're definitely going to look like you're ahead of the game and you're on top of things. Graham, thanks so much for joining me this week on the Productivities Podcast. Where can people find you and your work online?
Yeah, sure. So the book is How to Be a Productivity Ninja. So you'll find that on Amazon and everywhere else. And then the company is called Think Productive. So we run workshops for businesses. So you'll find us at thinkproductive.com, thinkproductive.co.uk, and various other domains like that.
And you're on the Twitter too, I think, aren't you?
Yeah, so just at Think Productive and at Graham Alcott on Twitter.
Gotcha. Thanks so much for joining me, Graham. Appreciate it. We'll have to have you
Thank
back
you.
On.
Pleasure.
Thanks again to Graham for joining me this week on the show. Thanks to John Polster for producing this week's episode and all the episodes that we've had over the past several months. And thanks to all of you for listening. We are going to have Graham back on the show. And the reason is because he has so much more that he wants to talk about. We want to dive more into that 9th characteristic, which we didn't have time to do. But what we did have time to do was stuff that you didn't get to hear because Patreon supporters got to hear some stuff that we talked off right off the top. We talked about, you know, what he defines productivity as. We talked about a whole bunch of other things, about 11 minutes worth of content that you get as a Patreon supporter. So if you're interested, head over to patreon.com/productivityist. There are perk levels from level $1 all the way up to the $100 level. And I hope you'll join us. There's an active Slack community exclusive only to Patreon supporters. There's lots going on there. And I hope you will join us there. If not, that's cool. I love the fact you're listening. I'd love to get a rating or review in iTunes or the podcast aggregator of your choice. We've got a lot of more cool episodes, a lot of more cool episodes coming up, as well as what you've heard in the archives. A lot of great episodes, and I'm looking forward to bringing more to you each and every week. That's it for this week's episode. I will get rid of my sinus cold will be gone by the time I'm back next week. But until next time, I am Mike Vardy, the host of the Productivityist Podcast, as well as founder of Productivityist and Productivity Strategist, reminding you... Wait. I'm not done yet. I also want to thank our sponsor, Transpose, this week. Head over to productivityist.com/transpose, and you can check out what they have to offer. They're a really valuable tool. You heard me talk about them earlier in the show, and I've talked about them for several weeks. Big, big thanks to them for sponsoring the show. I couldn't leave the show without remembering to thank them. So again, the false ending is now no longer a false ending. We're going to wrap this thing up now. Again, thanks for joining me this week. And remember, keep moving things forward.